An interview with Rajapalayam Ramani Ammar. She carries herself with a special dignity, born from the peace of deep devotion. This is what we feel when Ramani Ammar walks past us at Sri Ramanashramam. The spiritual aspirations which consumed her since her childhood have blossomed into a graceful flower of virtue and self-poise. In this interview, videotaped in December of 1989, she briefly told us her life story. Questioner, please tell us about how you first came to Ramanashramam. Ramani Ammar, my chosen deity in childhood was Lord Krishna. From my youth, I had very pleasant dreams and would sometimes see Lord Krishna or other familiar deities in these dreams. But at the age of 16 or 17, I once saw a strange sage-like person coming down a hill and was captivated by his grandeur. I later came to realize that this sage was Sri Bhagavan. After having that vision of Bhagavan in my dream, a certain fear that had gripped me for some time all of a sudden disappeared. My relatives and others noticed this and commented how I was now moving about freely. This was Bhagavan's first influence on me. Also, at the age of 16, I was reading the Jnana Vasishta. While reading it, I experienced that I was enveloped in Jyoti, a bright white light. I thought that if this is what happens just by reading it, how much more wonderful would it be if we practiced Dhyana and the other spiritual injunctions taught in the book. I used to be thrilled simply by reading those ancient Tamil scriptures. But it wasn't until I was 20 before I got hold of a book on Bhagavan. Kumaraswamy Raja, the chief minister of Madras, who was a cousin of mine, brought me Bharati's biography of Bhagavan, Ramana Vijayam, in 1946. Mrs. Kumaraswamy Raja was very fond of me, and though other relatives prohibited me from reading spiritual books, she used to stealthily supply me with them. The day she sent this book over with a boy, I was sitting in the house with a friend, a headmistress, who, though Christian, was sincerely interested in our religion. The boy who brought the book said, "Mommy said to hand this book to you." I got up and went up to the gate to receive it. The moment I touched the book, I lost body consciousness. My whole body became stiff. I somehow managed to return and sit next to my friend. Noticing my plight, she commented that I shouldn't read such books that make me forget myself. Everyone was complaining about this same thing. For in those days, most of the time, I would be sitting quietly, alert to my spiritual aspirations. All thought that I was simply idle with no work to do. With difficulty, I opened Ramana Vijayam to the first page and was met by the photo of the young Ramana. I became speechless. My friend, who was somewhat alarmed at my condition, had to leave, and I somehow saw her off. With great reverence, I took the book and started reading it. As I read, my eyes kept closing involuntarily, and I was drawn within, which I later came to know was meditation. Bhagavan taught me meditation in this way. After reading this book, I felt I should leave home and go meet Ramana Maharishi. It is my family custom that women never even leave the house, not to mention leaving the town. That vairagya or desperate determination to leave my house for spiritual fulfillment was implanted in me by this book, and I am sure it was by the direct influence of Sri Bhagavan himself. Because of my intense desire to go and see Bhagavan, my younger brother was moved to help me. He is a very pious person with a soft nature. With his help, I secretly left home and reached Tiruvannamalai and the holy feet of Sri Bhagavan. But after reaching there, I was overcome with a sense of guilt for running away from home. This feeling of guilt and a sense of bringing ill fame to the respected Rajagopalan family was uppermost in my mind when I first came to Bhagavan's presence. I felt depressed because of this. When I arrived, I went to the office to inquire where Bhagavan was. I was told that Bhagavan was near the well. When I came near the well, I saw a thatched shed next to it, and all I could see in it was a flaming fire. I thought to myself, I asked for directions to go to Bhagavan, and they have sent me to a sacrificial place where there is a fire. It was only after a few minutes that I saw Bhagavan's comely form emerge from those flames. Even when I had the Jyoti Darshana, I was blaming myself, thinking that I had this delusion of seeing a fire instead of Bhagavan, because I was foolish enough to come out into the hot sun. It was only afterwards I realized Bhagavan had bestowed upon me this great boon of Jyoti Darshana. Next, I heard Bhagavan saying to me, "You have now come home. Why don't you sit down?" Coming from a family where women never go out, and having never gone out myself, I did not know how to behave in company. When Bhagavan said, "You have now come home, you can sit down," I sat down right in front of him and not in a place reserved for women. For 3 days, I kept sitting in front of him, and all the while, the feeling of guilt for running away from home was haunting me. I kept sitting in front of Bhagavan, not knowing how to act or ask questions or anything else. On the third day, I heard Bhagavan telling someone, "I also ran away from my home, and at the railroad station, I was so frightened that anyone could have identified me as a runaway, caught hold of me and sent me home. I ran away like a thief." When Bhagavan narrated this, it completely wiped out all my guilt feelings from that moment onwards. This was an act of pure grace directed towards me. It is very strange that by those few words, Bhagavan entirely removed any residual fear in me. Bhagavan later said that sometimes you have to do a wrong thing to achieve the ultimate right thing. He even commented that there is nothing wrong in a woman running away at the tender age of 20 to come here. I should narrate how my first Giri Pradakshina took place. I was not accustomed to walking at all, but whenever people came to tell Bhagavan that they were going on a Giri Pradakshina, I longed to go too. One day, Venkatramaya and others were going round the hill, and in this group there were two devotees who were over 80 years old. I did not say anything to Bhagavan, but was all the time praying that I should be included in that party. Immediately, Bhagavan said to Venkatramaya, "Take this girl, the one seated there, with you." Bhagavan didn't stop there, for he even said, "She will walk very slowly. Will that be all right?" Then Bhagavan turned towards me and said, "These are our own people. Are you prepared to go with them?" Looking at me, he simply said, "Go." The pradakshina took almost 6 hours. At Adi Annamalai, I could move no more. I requested the group to proceed without me and told them I will reach the ashram later. But they said, "How could we leave you when Bhagavan entrusted you to us? Even if it takes you another day to complete the pradakshina, we will stay with you. Only with you can we re-enter the ashram." I was again feeling very guilty when we finally arrived. I was thinking that others take 3 to 4 hours to complete the pradakshina, and I have taken 6 hours, wasting not only my time, but theirs too. I felt that they were all older than me, and a younger person like me had caused them so much inconvenience. When I entered the ashram, my heart was heavy with this feeling. With great difficulty, we entered into the presence of Bhagavan, and as soon as I sat down, Bhagavan started narrating how the pradakshina should be done by walking as slow as a royal queen in her 9th month of pregnancy. "So there is nothing wrong in what she did," he concluded. "After this, many times I used to go around the hill all alone. I used to fast a lot in those days, almost 15 days out of a month. It was helping in my sadhana. One day, with the permission of Chinnaswamy, I stayed in the ashram till 7:30 p.m., which is the supper time. Bhagavan turned to me and said, 'Aren't you coming for supper?' Then he said, 'Sattvic food should be eaten. There is no meaning in mere fasting.' Since then, I stopped fasting. Even if I wanted to fast, for some reason or other, it would be broken. That is a real wonder to me." I was not aware of this Brahmin-non-Brahmin separation in the dining hall. One day, I entered and saw the screen dividing the seating area. Some people were already seated. I was in a fix as to where I should sit. Bhagavan saw my plight and asked me to sit right next to him. He said to an attendant, "She doesn't know anything, so put her leaf here." Then he said to me, "Don't worry about these Brahmins." That is how Bhagavan, in his kindness, used to take care of me, for I was all alone and ignorant of the customs and ways of the world. Since Bhagavan was showering all this personal attention on me, Chinnaswamy also took a personal interest in my welfare. As Muruganar was away, Chinnaswamy offered me his residence to stay in and also offered to send someone to guard me. I told him that I was not afraid and would lock the house from inside and needed no one to guard me. Bhagavan overheard this and said, "She is a young girl and does not know the consequences. Let her sleep indoors behind closed doors, but you send a servant to sleep outside on the veranda. I did not know anything when I came here. Even cooking I learned here, and of course Bhagavan taught me many things from within." Interviewer, since you used to sit in front of Bhagavan quite often, could you please give a detailed description of what is called Bhagavan's glance of grace? Ramaniyammal, Bhagavan's look was real magic. You could not do anything but just look into his eyes, which would transform you into samadhi. Everyone in the hall used to feel Bhagavan was looking at them alone. This was the true experience of each one of us. In his inimitable way, he was giving the glance of grace to each and everyone seated in the hall. Bhagavan's look used to take us deep into samadhi. Just by looking into his eyes, we came to know what meditation is. This was and is the common experience of all devotees. You ask anyone and you will get the same reply. Once he gave me such a look, and for a very long time I was absorbed in samadhi. Bhagavan was reading the newspaper. Letters were being brought in. Normal activity was going on, but I was oblivious of the happenings outside of me. In fact, I was unaware of my body. I once remember a Harijan lady who, for the past 25 years, was gathering honey to send to Sri Bhagavan. On every occasion, she was unable to bring the honey herself and had to send it with someone. After waiting for 25 years, she finally found the opportunity to come. The poor lady was in tattered clothes, standing before Bhagavan. Her eyesight was poor, and I still vividly recall the unusual way she looked at Sri Bhagavan, calling out, "Oh, darling, where are you? I want to see you." Bhagavan, in all his graciousness, said, "Granny, look this way. I'm here." Looking at the honey she had brought with her, he said to me, "They are Brahmins. They won't eat this. We will share it and eat it." It is often said Bhagavan did not give direct upadesha, but what else is all this? Although Bhagavan repeatedly pointed out human frailty, people were not prepared to rectify themselves. As if talking to himself, he looked at this poor old woman in ragged clothes and said, "Poor lady, she must be hungry. And where will she go for clothes? Who will offer her food and clothes?" Upon hearing this, Vondu Reddiya got up and said, "We will give her food and also see that some clothes are purchased." Then Reddiya took the woman to the dining hall and fed her sumptuously. He also sent someone to town to buy her a sari. As the old woman had no money, she had walked a great distance to come here. Bhagavan, knowing this, said in an impersonal way, "Would anyone be interested in getting her a bus ticket?" Reddiya again came forward and said, "We will provide her with a bus ticket and see her off." When this lady returned from the dining hall, she was touching the ground and then touching her eyes. That is a way of prostration and thanksgiving. It is noteworthy that whenever the poor or untouchables came, Bhagavan took a very personal interest in them, which was a moving sight to see. Sri Bhagavan had absolutely no connection with either body or mind. People used to be confused by seeing him read letters and newspapers. His inner state never changed since he was 16. This was demonstrated repeatedly, but only those who had the eyes to see could see and realize it. Sri Bhagavan was also a real taskmaster. He used to quietly move around to various places within the ashram without notice. So every place had to be kept clean and neat because Bhagavan was very particular about cleanliness. He was also particular about punctuality. This kept every member of the ashram alert and on their toes, ready at all times to do what was necessary. Look how this ashram has grown. Unless Bhagavan was very careful in his silent supervision, could it have grown to this extent? Questioner, where were you at the time of Sri Bhagavan's Mahanirvana? Ramaniya Man, I was at Rajapalayam. That night, I saw a blue light beautifully rising up into the sky. I knew Bhagavan had left the body. I felt that I did not want to live after that and started a fast. By fasting, I wanted to drop the body. After 5 or 6 days of not touching food, I had several visions. In one of them, I was taken inside the Arunachala hill and saw there rishis performing yajnas and yoga. I also saw Sri Bhagavan seated there. Some munis or rishis offered some prasad to Bhagavan. Then Sri Bhagavan himself gave it to me and I was made to eat. I remembered that I was fasting but couldn't refuse Bhagavan's prasad. How can I say that it was a dream? I consider it was Bhagavan's grace alone. He also said to me, "You say and repeat, I have gone away. I have gone away. Where have you gone? I am right here. You are not looking inward. If you look within, I am there." For many days afterwards, the smell of that prasad lingered. The aroma even spread all through the house. My brother and sisters kept talking about it. When I was fasting, my brother and sister were also fasting with me. The morning following that vision, we started taking food again. In the dream, I also remember Bhagavan was seated near a tank and rishis and munis were serving him. He looked splendid, gracious, magnanimous, and magnificent. It was a beautiful sight. I saw there Kamadhenu, the celestial cow, the celestial tree, and many other wonderful things. It was a divine sight indeed. From that day onwards, I had no thought at all that Bhagavan had left us. He is all pervading, and I experienced him, particularly in my heart. I no longer felt sorrow. He is even here now. When I came again to Thiruvannamalai, I was filled with bliss. You can feel Bhagavan's presence every minute. Right this very minute, I feel His divine presence. I have no unhappiness. I am happy all the time. Sri Bhagavan's presence is so overpowering. See how we all are gathered here. What have we done to deserve this? Interviewer, to my knowledge, I haven't done anything good. And I also wonder, along with you, how Bhagavan has gathered us here. Ramaniya Mal, I can't say that I have ever done anything bad. From my childhood, I didn't know what is good and what is bad either. But doing good or bad has nothing to do with our coming to Bhagavan's presence. It is only by His grace that we are all filled with His glorious presence. Note, we extend our warm appreciation to J. Jayaraman, who was the Tamil interviewer, James Hattle, who videotaped it, Sri V. Ganesan, who translated the interview into English, and to Geeta Bhatt, who kindly typed it.